Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. So what I've got in, what I have in plan in store for us today is we're going to do a review of the series called Money Revealed, which is an interview series all about money, where they interview the most successful and wealthiest individuals, and they've been discussing topics like investing, the stock market, 401ks, retirement plans, pensions, taxes, how to save money on taxes, real estate, cryptocurrency, blockchain, entrepreneurship, an episode I haven't seen yet, I guess, is on life insurance. And since I've seen almost every episode, I thought it'd be valuable to briefly touch on what I've learned to kind of get the conversation going in the group about this stuff and how we can position ourselves for financial success. And Jason is on the call with us, one of our Leverage moderators, and he's also seen almost all the episodes. I guess both of us are either we have a lot of time on our hands or just so motivated to see the free episodes instead of paying. Because basically the way that they've launched this program is they welcome the call, by the way, Jason. Thanks for being on, fucking cheapskate. A cheap Jew and a cheap Asian. So
the last name Jew. So
yeah, Robbie Jew and Jason Jew. So the format for these is, I heard about it through one of my mentors named Mike Dillard, who's a internet marketer, and he was one of the guys interviewed for the blockchain portion of it. And the marketing for this series was basically done by, if you tune in every day, you can catch all of the episodes for free, but they're only up for 24 hours. So if you don't see it, you missed it, and you'll have to buy the whole series. They're selling the series right now for $397. They say that's 50% off until the free kind of window is over, which I'm guessing is in like a few days. I don't know, but Jason and I won't have to buy it because we've watched all the free ones.
What's crazy, and this is what they're banking on, is if you watch and you're like, oh shit, I didn't take any notes. Now I really need to buy it because there's a lot of information.
Right.
I'm 99% sure that's what they're banking on anyway. So, oh man, so they got me. I didn't take notes.
I took some, but I mean, it's a pretty good deal considering the information has been pretty fucking good. It's opened my eyes to a bunch of stuff. I thought I knew a lot about this stuff, and there's so much that I didn't know, and I'm sure there's so much more that I don't know. But I was kind of happy that I've gotten a lot of the major pillars kind of right. I guess the other thing that they're banking on is who has 3 hours a day to watch to watch these things, because there's a 2 hour episode each day, and then there's like an hour long bonus. So luckily, entrepreneurs like myself and Jason have the schedule, at least anyways, where we can devote some of this time. But I remember waking up at like, because I'm in Kiev, and they go off air, I think, on East Coast time around midnight. And I wanted to see Mike Dillard's interview, but I think I partied the day before or something. So I was like, fuck, I'm going to miss it. So I set an alarm to wake up at, I think it was 5 a.m. to catch it before it went off air. And I actually did. So Pat, kudos to me. Jason, I can't believe you've watched as many as I have, if not more. How the hell have you managed to do that?
I think I might actually have missed the blockchain one. I think that's the one I missed. It's actually hard because I've been doing it while I've been working. And I'm in Porto, so I'm like, I think, 3 hours earlier than you, Robbie.
Yeah.
So I've just been doing it during the day while I've been working. But
yeah,
the only downside is that, like, I'm, like, focused on working, so, like, I'm not, like, you know, totally engaged, which sucks. But,
you're watching in the background.
You know, like Robbie said, what Robbie was saying was, I'm getting the main pillars, and it's just, like, all the little details, I figure I have to buy the books, or whoever, you know, almost all these guys wrote books, right? So I figure I'll have to buy those books if I really want to dive into it. But that's probably my only thing that I wish I had more time to do is like really take notes and like listen and like, you know, figure out what's going on. But, you know, it's like Robbie said, there's a lot of stuff that was like relatively new to me, at least concept wise. There's some counterintuitive stuff that you wouldn't normally imagine. So, you know, I'm happy to talk about that a little bit. And I think the key takeaways is that, like, if you're listening to this or if you haven't listened to any of them, I think the key takeaway is you don't know anything about money. So yeah. like basically whatever you thought, like, and I, you know, like Robbie said, like, I think I'm pretty decent at like understanding like, oh, how they're trying to get you. But a lot of it is better than that. In fact, like I would imagine a guy like Max Osmond who does finances for a living, would actually get some benefit from this type of stuff. If not confirming what he already knows, but also like maybe adding more tools to his toolbox. So I think there's a lot of things that, you know, people that are good with money might not even know about this stuff. So.
Oh yeah, there's no way. There's just absolutely no way that people can understand all this stuff. Even some of the experts, right? Like the guy who is maybe discussing real estate, he's going to watch the life insurance one, or he's going to watch the crypto one, and he's going to be blown away because there's just no way you can know such a wide array
exactly.
of subjects.
And it's a good thing you brought that up because that's exactly what I was thinking when I watched the real estate one and then watched the one today. And I was like, oh, wow, this is completely different, but it's even better. Like if you combine these two together, you're you know, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So
let's go through some of the, how about this? I'll talk about the ones that kind of really resonated with me, or we'll just go back and forth. I'll talk about something that resonated with me. You can commentate on it, and then I'll have you do the same, and I'll add my 2 cents, and we'll just kind of go until we get tired. How about that?
Okay. Sounds good.
The first episode that I saw that was like a total mind fuck was the episode 1 bonus with that older guy who explained the Federal Reserve and the banking system and how it's just one big fucking scam, essentially. And a lot of people would hear that and be like, oh, conspiracy theory. It's like, no, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is actually the facts of how they created the Federal Reserve and the fiat money system and the banking system. And my short little synopsis of what he explained in that interview was prior to, you know, before the turn of the 20th century, so in the 1800s, they had state banks, and people would use a bank to obviously put their money in, protect their money, and exchange. Banks were able to loan out that money and make interest. However, there was no, there was no regulation for these banks, so a lot of the time people would go into the bank and try to get their money, and they just couldn't get it out. So runs on the bank would occur, and it just wasn't a safe system. People were getting screwed over all the time. So what they did was they said, all right, we need some reforms and some regulations. So they had this secret meeting in Georgia, and they said, all right, we are the guys that know the most about this, so we're going to put these reforms in place. And what people thought was, oh, this is politicians and people who have our best interest doing this, creating these reforms. But it was actually just the heads of all the banks who got together, and they created a cartel, in essence. And they involved a few politicians in there that they could incentivize with like kickbacks and bribes, and they created the Federal Reserve. And basically, the Federal Reserve is a central bank that is tied to the government. However, the people running the government, the politicians, don't really know anything about money because we're not trained to know anything about money. And the bank has basically been – this Federal Reserve has been given the right to steal, in essence, by utilizing interest rates and creating and adding money to the money supply. And they've told us that this is good. It stimulates growth, blah, 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 blah. You know, we need it. If you studied any sort of banking, I studied some finance like my freshman year of high school, and some of the stuff was explained. I knew the Fed can control the money supply and change interest rates to, you know, boost the economy and so on and so forth. But really, what's happening is due to inflation, and due to the amount we're taxed, it's almost impossible for anyone to get ahead by working and doing the American dream, right? If you do what they tell you to do, which is go to school, graduate, you know, invest in your education, get a good job, invest in your retirement and save, you'll be left with some money at the end of your, you know, when you're 65, but that money will not probably last you until you're dead, especially now that, you know, people are living well into their 80s, 90s. And you're going to be living way below your means. And here's the craziest thing about it is when all these baby boomers start to retire, there's not going to be enough. I'm kind of getting another shit like 401ks. There's not going to be enough money around to support all the Social Security. So in essence, what's going on with the banking system is you've been told a lie, and the process that they have, our schooling system is the European style of schooling where they say, do this and do that, and you will become a great employee or a great soldier. And the people in power who control the money, it's in their best interest to make sure no one really gets educated on this stuff. That's why it's not taught in schools. And you're kind of just falling into a trap if you're doing everything you think you should be doing. And that's the kind of the fucked up part is, you know, you're doing hard work and you're saving, you're being prudent. You're like, all right, I'm not going to take this vacation. I'm not going to go out and buy that expensive car. I'm going to save for my future. And all that money, for the most part, is just basically being raped and taken from you in the form of taxes and inflation. So if you don't know how the rich deal with taxes, if you don't know how to invest your money in vehicles that can outlast or outgrow inflation, you're really setting yourself up to get screwed over. So, Jason, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was definitely something I didn't know, but it wasn't really that surprising to me. I mean, if you consider how the bank bailout system worked and when the last crash happened for the real estate crash, it's like, oh, wow, a bunch of rich guys that have a lot of leverage and power created a system. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But what's crazy is that how accepted it's become as part of, like, you know, part of American history and also, like how things should be done. Right. But I agree with everything that Robbie said. The big takeaway, I think, from, you know, if I zoom out, like, you're like, okay, what is the Fed Reserve creation? Okay, yeah, they try to screw us now, but what does that help us now? The takeaway that you want to get from this is that you cannot trust the government programs or government push programs or bank push. Basically, anything, quote unquote, the man pushing something to you is likely to be beneficial to them and not necessarily beneficial to you. Nothing was created with your interest in mind, so that you need to take responsibility for those. And that's probably the number one thing that you can take away from all these sessions is that you need to get literate on this stuff. And, you know, you may not choose to do all the advices that, you know, the advice that they give you because maybe you don't have expertise in that area or not, but it's your responsibility to do so, and relying on, you know, other people to do it for you is a really bad way to go.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for adding that. Super important. And a perfect example of that is a 401k plan.
I got it. So, Robbie, like, you got to let me talk. Because the whole entire thing about this today's episode, which I don't think you watched the last one yet, is the 401k and, like, how it's all, like, this guy goes and says, not only is 401k a scam, Roth IRAs are a scam, everything's a scam, just put your money in, like, what amounts to be a life insurance policy vehicle.
Uh-huh.
It's like, so here's the way it works. So basically, 401ks screw you because of all the fees that they take. So, like, the money you think you're putting in and accruing over time is not actually those that amount of money because of all the fees. In fact, John Oliver, if you guys watched last week tonight on HBO, he did a whole piece about this, and it was, like, really good and, like, obviously in a comedic way. So that's part one. Part two is that they tax it on the way out. Now, they claim it's because you're going to be a lower income bracket, but chances are you're not. Because, you know, you, like, the way people work now, you never earn more money than, like, you know, you never earn less money than you did the year before. So you're going to be in the same income bracket. But not only that, but you're going to be taxed a lot higher. So the whole idea is you want to put post-tax dollars into the vehicle, which is how they came up with the Roth IRA. However, like, and I didn't really fully understand exactly what they were saying. They were saying that the Roth IRA also has a bunch of problems. And essentially what he said was, like, he found a vehicle that would guarantee, if you do it right, would guarantee that you get, you have no chance of negative returns in a given year, but you're capped at 25%, which is, like, basically no cap whatsoever. And then what you do is you take loans from that life insurance policy, to pay for your thing. So you can use that to fund your business ideas, for example. So instead of like your $50,000, you withdraw it and you spend that principal, it still accrues interest in your time and you've taken a loan out for that. And the life insurance companies are happy to do it. And you get a life insurance policy on top of it.
Wait, you can take loans out against it before your retirement, or is this once you hit like 65?
Yeah, exactly. No. It's like your money.
Okay.
Which is insane. And actually, I was pitched this by my life insurance agent a long time ago, back when I was like, before I even met you, Robbie, like when I was like 22 or 23. And I didn't it made sense at the time, but like, you didn't know if these guys are sleazy.
Yeah, I was pitched that too. Yeah. I didn't know what the fuck it was. So I was just like, not for me.
Yeah. And I think I opened it and I put some money in there. But like, obviously, I was like, okay, the match and blah, 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 that's going to be more important. So, but like, yeah, the way this guy lays it out, I'll probably buy his book, at some point if I actually get back to the 401k game and stuff like that, because it's like, yeah, if you're really doing it right, essentially what he outlines is that all the banks are doing this with your money that you put in their savings account, and they're making hand over fist in it. So why not you do it too? That's basically like the principle of what he said. So,
sounds like a smart plan.
Yeah, exactly. So like a lot of the guys before this episode were talking about, the real estate guy was talking about the Roth IRA and how you can use it as leverage and tax, deductions and all that stuff. And that's all well and good, but you're still getting screwed in some aspects of it. So like, yeah, this episode was entirely about that. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. That's the second episode of episode 8, right? The second part, I think. Today's episode.
Well, the second part, yeah.
Because the I think it was episode 3 or episode 2. He had a couple guys back to back who were talking about 401ks, and essentially what a 401k, like the shitty thing about it is you're automatically enrolled in a 401k, ever since last year when the tax laws were changed, so it was when Obama left office, he changed a law where now if you get a job with a company that offers 401ks, I think a lot of them do, or all of them do. You're automatically enrolled and they will match a part of your salary. So, you think, oh, good. Yeah, I've got this 401k. I'm saving for retirement and they're matching it, right? The whole reason they came up with the matching is so they can get idiots like us who had corporate jobs to agree to it, right? Because it's basically just a big scam to force people to opt in to buy financial products that they didn't need. Right, so it's like, all right, Jason, you got this job. I'm a guy working in financial services. I want to get your money. So here you go. You got this nifty 401k, and not only do you have to get it, do you get it for I'm going to hook you up with this thing, but your company is also going to give you money for free for getting in there. However, the fees, like you mentioned, the fees are so high, and even if it's depending on the stock market, you're always investing, even when things are going bad. Like no matter what, they're making fees, right? Because you're always putting more money in every month. Every time that paycheck comes in, they get a fee for whether they're doing a good job managing that money or not. It doesn't matter to them. So it's just a really shitty vehicle. And then the worst thing about it is at the end, when it might be time for you to retire, the government can just say, you know what? We promised those tax breaks, but we can't afford that now because we fucked up and we've got, a $20 trillion deficit. So sorry, no more tax breaks. They can just change it. And I'm sure they will.
I mean, well, here's a couple things, guys. Like, I don't want to say that we should be very clear, Robbie. We are not financial advisors. We cannot tell you, whether or not you should. But like, for example, it might make sense for you to put in the amount of money that they say to match. So I don't want you guys to just be like, I'm stopping investing in my 401k, because it may make sense. But the point is to do the math, right?
Right.
And what most people, when they do the math, they just look at all the returns, but they don't account for the fees. And that's what Robbie's saying. So, and they take the fees off no matter what. So if you're making money or you're losing money on the market, they take the fees. So that's the part that I think is the real key takeaway here. I think there's a world where a lot of companies, you should put in what they match, because it's literally free money they give you, and that might account for all the fees, and therefore it's like a decent vehicle. But it may or may not, right? That's that's the key takeaway, is that you don't know.
You don't know. Yeah.
You should do your research. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some of the guys were advocating. None of this, by the way, none of this is my opinion. I am simply regurgitating shit I've heard. So I know nothing, right? One of the guys on there was like, don't do it at all. You're way better off paying yourself first and investing that in, you know, crypto. Here's my company. Invest in me, right? Like, you got to be aware of some of these guys, right? Because they could have a hidden agenda.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and also, like, not only an agenda, but, yeah, that's basically what it is that, like, you got to be careful about things, and it's better to run your own numbers because, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
One of the episodes was more, it took a more like spiritual approach. It wasn't just like, here's something you could do, you know, to make more money, or here's a vehicle, or here's that. It was basically the idea that you should always be investing in yourself, educating yourself, and the greatest investment vehicle is yourself. Like, if you start a company, or if you understand one of these vehicles and you apply that knowledge, you'll make, you know, infinity X returns versus if you understand all this stuff a little and you let someone else manage it for you. They basically said that's the key to screwing this over, is the less control you have, the bigger risk you have. So the more you know and the more you understand and the more you're in control of your own financial future, the way more likely you are to be successful. And this idea that, you know, you can just get a job and give your money to this financial planner and he's going to like have your back is just crazy, because you don't know what he's doing. You don't know what he's investing in. You don't even know if he's qualified. Most of these guys aren't qualified to be financial planners. Most of them, so it's just a really kind of screwy, corrupt system, because that's basically the common knowledge. 95% of people think, oh, that I'm doing the right thing by doing this. But really, you're just setting yourself up to work a long, hard road and die broke.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, so I think most people in the group probably don't have financial advisors, at least, maybe like a certain portion of them do, but I'm guessing the only time you guys are going to deal with financial advisors is in your 401k, which you don't ever talk to the financial advisor, right? Because they get that money and they get to do whatever the fuck they want, right?
Yeah.
But the key takeaway is like Robbie saying, is you should be investing yourself. And how I interpret a lot of that is, this is probably the one thing that I do get right about, like, I don't think I'm very good at finances in general. Like, I'm not particularly great at handling debt. I'm like not particularly great at like, you know, using these vehicles and setting them up. But because I've always had a belief that worst case scenario, I can make more money based on my own skill set, right? So that's the thing I've always been betting on. And one reason why I started my company and all this other stuff is to bet on that type of idea. You know, I think I made a post in the group saying that, like, don't go out and, like, just watch these videos and be like, okay, I need to put money in X or Y or Z, right? You need to understand, like, it's all about what you know and what you don't know, right? And you need to find areas where you can get edges in what you know so that you can leverage that into monetary return, right? And actually, the first part of today's topic was talking a little bit about starting small business like that and how expertise is, like, one of the most high-value businesses. I mean, Robbie basically... your entire lifestyle is funded based on expertise, right? You teach people how to coach. I mean, you teach people how to date women, right? And other things like that, which is insanely profitable if you imagine, like, the sense of, like, once you acquire the skills to do it, selling it is not like you have to go and manufacture something each time. It's literally your knowledge, right? Like, if especially if you, like, made it to a PDF, right? You can, like, sell, like, 1,000 PDFs for $1.99, and it's, like, almost 99.9% profit, right?
Right.
So a lot of these things are like, what can you become an expert in? How can you leverage that into making money? And I think I've made the post in the group, like, how do you create value or something, build a product of value? How do you create a product of value and have someone fund it while you create it? Or how do you put money into something that can create a product of value, right? If you can't do one of those three things, then you probably aren't investing in yourself enough. And or positioning yourself enough to be able to do this. And, you know, maybe that's not necessarily the end of the world, but, you know, if you're trying to make more money and create what you know, like Chris Rock, I think it's Chris Rock had a bit where he's like wealth and rich, right? Like rich you can lose with like a bad summer and a coke habit, but wealth is like you can't get rid of wealth. Like if you're trying to create wealth, it's like, you know, that's where it is, right? Like that's you got to invest in yourself and you got to be smart about it. And the only other piece to that is like when Robbie says you the control part, it doesn't mean you can't have people that work for you or whatever to do things. It's that you just have to know what they're doing, right? You have to be able to call them out on their bullshit. I think Max Osman posted that in the group too, where he was like, you know, like, you have to be proactive with your financial, advisors and stuff like that. You can't just like rely on them to find things for you. You have to suggest stuff to them. It's kind of the same thing, right? While you may have them do the work, you have to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it and why that's good for you. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. One thing I want to bring up before we go into real estate, because that's basically like the bread and butter for me and you, Jason. We can talk about that till we're blue in the face. And I don't think they've had a vacation rental real estate expert on their series, so they're really missing out. I think the best thing I heard in all of the episodes so far was a guy named Roger Hamilton, and he's got like an entrepreneurial dojo. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's in Bali. He's kind of married like all these new age spiritual teachings with you know, cold hard money, cash investing, and teaching entrepreneurs. He basically has like an entrepreneurial incubator for like the spiritual, something like that. So, anyways, so it was pretty cool to check out. That's been my favorite interview so far, and the best quote is something he found from, I believe it was like a Japanese proverb or something, but it really put things in perspective, and I'll read it to you. And what that is, it says, your reason for being, like your reason for being as a human, is to find what you love, plus what the world needs, plus what you're good at, plus what you get paid for, and that equals your reason for being. And so what you love is your passion, right? What the world needs is your purpose. What you're good at is your talents. And what you get paid for, or how you get paid, is your business model. So if you can combine your passion plus your purpose plus your talents plus your business model, you will have your reason for being, and you can really change the world with that. And I was like, yeah, no shit, you really can. Like, if you have, like, most people have maybe one of those things. Like, they don't really know their passion. Maybe they're good at some stuff. Right? Their business model. Like, imagine having all four of those crushing in action. I'm like, wow, that's actually really good. So if you can get really close to all of those, like, figure out what you're good at, figure out what the world needs, figure out your talents, and figure out how to put that into a business model, not only will you be successful, but you'll never really work another day of your life. Any thoughts, Jason?
I really enjoyed that guy too, but this is where I was kind of like, I don't know how much other people are going to get out of that, because like, Rob, you and me have our own small businesses or whatever, and so we're like entrepreneurs, and we're like, this is kind of like porn for us, right? Like getting a motivational speech, yeah. Be like, yeah, you're going to change the world. So I'm a little bit more skeptical about all that. I agree with everything you're saying, right? But I don't know how much the guys in the group are going to agree with that type of stuff, right? Because for a lot of these guys, right, they work, you know, relatively 9-to-5 type jobs, or at least jobs where they're like, you know, at a position and they have a career in that aspect. And telling them like, okay, you got to marry all these things is not really practical advice from that perspective, right? It's one of those things where, like, well, I'll tell you my story, right? Like, I was working those types of jobs, right, until I joined Sensei, and then I started this company. And it was a really long haul for me to get from point A to point B. It wasn't just like, I didn't have an idea right away. I didn't really like have a company thing that I was going to be like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So like, you know, how did I get to start a company, right? I just built expertise. And then like, you know, working at Sensei, what's weird about working at Sensei was that like, I did a lot of stuff that was like way beneath my pay grade, but I also learned a couple things about like some of how like building a model, a budget model, and building a business model and some of that stuff. And that's actually what gave me confidence. It's not like I don't do that stuff or I'm good at doing that stuff. It's just like, I was like, oh, you know, people that do businesses do this all the time and they're not that much better than me. So like, how hard could it be, right? Let's start one, right? And I'll just pay someone to do like, you know, the LLC creation. I'll pay an accountant, right? I'll pay this thing, and then that'll get me from A to B, right? But if you guys are, I mean, it's one of those things, Robbie, where like you and me, I think we're like, yes, that's like that.
No, you're totally
right. Huge takeaway.
You're totally right.
I think If you're low level, you're probably just above your head, right?
I was coming all over my own face. Oh my god, it's so good. I appreciate your skepticism.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where it's kind of like zombie. If you're talking about like, dude, I just cracked the code on how threesomes with girls, and like you're talking to guys that can barely like talk to girls on the street. It's like it's like okay, cool.
Cool story.
So
man.
I think the practical advice for people from that takeaway is that, it's keep working on trying to find those things that make you passionate about certain things and try to invest in expertise in them. I think the main takeaway I would say for like an average Joe on the street that doesn't have their own business is that it might not be that hard to start something on the side as you think. You know, it goes back to what I was saying was like, if you think you can do one of those three things, then do it, right? My first investment was basically, I had a three-bedroom apartment that I was sharing with people and two of my roommates left. So I decided to rent out the thing on Airbnb because like Jesse was telling me how great an idea it was. And then I was making so much money on it that like, that kind of started this thing. And not all those investments have paid off and not all those things. I've made a lot of mistakes on the way and it's a lot of good learning experience, but it kind of puts you on the path of like, oh, okay, the cliff isn't that far, you know, the cliff isn't that high, right? You can jump, you can still make it. Worst case scenario, I can like go and get another job, right? If like everything failed today, I could go get a job and I don't feel as like horrified about it. Right. And I think that's probably what I would guess like the average person feels right now, is that like, oh, I couldn't do any of that stuff because like, what if XYZ happened? How long is it going to take me to get up? And blah, blah, blah. So, you know, assess your own path, but you know, I would say like work on one of those things. Try to think about something that creates value that you enjoy, something that you're passionate about, something that, you know, it's like Marie Kondo, that like minimalist girl from Japan, where it's like you hold it up in your life for 15 minutes and it sparks joy and keep it, that type of thing. You know, I think that's probably more practical advice for people like that are just working 9 to 5s right now.
Sure.
And then, you know, once you start finding that, maybe you can see if it, like how it melds into this purpose and stuff like that. You know, like almost all these guys that Robbie's talking about, basically the path was, oh, I wanted to make a lot of money, so I did. And then I was like, okay, now I feel empty or this feels whatever. So then I was like, what do I really care about? Oh, I can teach people how to make a lot of money. And that's become like their purpose in life, right? Or whatever it is.
Yeah. 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 There's definitely that annoying bit of it too. The guys who are just like, wait, you didn't make any, like, I always have a huge skepticism for people who are teaching internet marketing. Because I'm like, the only reason you're making money is because there's dumbasses like me who like listen to your webinar and believe the fucking bullshit you're saying, but you never made any money until you started teaching people how to make money, you fucking asshole. So, you know, I've certainly fallen for that nonsense quite a bit. But I want to talk about side hustles, and then we can talk about real estate. And I think having a side hustle – thinking about a side hustle, side business, right? I think it's super important, and it's been really, really key in my life. Basically, like when I graduated college, I was playing. I'd say, you know, it was basically professional poker. It was at the heyday of the party poker, kind of. You know, you could play in America. It wasn't taxed. It wasn't regulated, and I made a bunch of money. But I was like, I don't want to be a poker player. Like, this just seems like such a kind of like lowbrow, you know, kind of like sleazy job. So I got a job at an investment bank and I hated that job, but I was really passionate about pickup and dating. And I was going to all these boot camps and learning all this crazy stuff about dating and women. So I just kind of started this side hustle on the side, which was later turned into Inner Confidence. And thank God I started it because in 2008, when the economy collapsed, I lost my job in investment banking. So if I hadn't had the side hustle, I wouldn't have been able to be like, all right, well, time to turn on the side hustle and try to make some money. Because I was making like maybe like $300 a month, like from that side business. But once I started focusing on it and putting all my time into it, I was able to, you know, I was able to support myself. Within a month, I found a client who was paying me $3,000 a month. So I essentially like, you know, created a minimum wage, you know, yearly rate for me. But then from there, you know, a few years later, Jesse and I started the Airbnb side hustle. And then that side hustle turned into like a way bigger thing than IC, just because the returns from Airbnb were so out of control, like when we started. And, you know, now obviously, you know, and then you know, that turned into SenseDay, which Jason would, you know, brought Jason on board later. So the cool thing about starting a side hustle is you learn something. It could start making more money than whatever you're doing now. And you always kind of have a backup, and you're always learning something, which is the most important part. So if it wasn't for side hustles, I wouldn't have figured this real estate stuff out. I wouldn't have figured out how to make money selling information, which is really my passion. And I just can't really stress the importance enough of doing that. And so Jason, what are your thoughts on that?
I have not found, you know, well, actually, I don't know. So the side hustle part, I completely agree with. That's basically what I said. It's like, think about, like, especially if you have a 9-to-5 job, right? Like, like, I guarantee you, most people, if you're working a normal job, especially if you're in, like, the tech world, a normal world, you could probably work, like, 40 or so hours a week, unless you're doing, like, a startup or something like that, and be, like, okay, right? So that means you have, like, another 10 to 20 hours a week to think about other stuff, and you'll still have a social life. You'll still have to be able to do that. I mean, you're not going to be able to go out every night and party, but you'll be able to go out on the weekends or like on a date or whatever. And it's really like, you know, they say it was like how you spend your time. I completely agree with that type of stuff. And, you know, I actually talked to Tyler about this a while back. This is going to get a little bit into like the spiritual side and like merging all this stuff and like kind of what Rob was talking about, why he got into IC and like why that's the one constant in his life. But like, you know, it's kind of like, I was feeling pretty down about my company at one point because it was like, one, we hadn't broken even yet. You know, like getting companies to start, you a lot of times take losses. And I wasn't really enjoying it either. And I was like, why the hell am I doing this? And I don't necessarily see like a huge future in this. And like, I might fail and I might like not make a bunch of money and I'm not having fun, right? So long story short, I redid a bunch of stuff and I feel much better about the company now. And I think I'm enjoying the process more. And a lot of it came down to like before I was trying to do a bunch of stuff that I wasn't good at and I thought I had to do because no one else could do it. And now I've kind of restructured the company where I can actually focus on stuff I like doing, which is like problem solving, getting into the weeds, like developing a product. And it's much more enjoyable. And I think that's where I would say like the side hustle stuff comes into play is that if you turn into a side hustle and you're just doing just to make money, it's going to be really tough for you to like turn that into a full-time thing. But if you really enjoy it, then I think that's where you're going to find like you can turn that into a business. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. And that's the only reason you shouldn't do a side hustle that you don't like. Cause I mean, in reality, you don't need it. You have a fucking job, right? Like a side hustle is a great insurance policy, right? But obviously don't do something you don't like. Do something you're interested in. It could turn into a passion. It could turn into a talent, right? But yeah, don't. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Like basically, I was layered in with false hopes of like yacht thoughts, and no, I'm just joking. So like, I mean, one of my bigger things I struggle with is I've come from this belief of like, oh, you have to sacrifice something to get something. So like, I've always been like, okay, I'm going to sacrifice these 2 years of my life. And then the next 5 years are going to be amazing, right? And if life doesn't really work that way, and I think if people do have that mindset like me, then they should stop having it because it doesn't work.
That's what my boss told me.
And I would say that, you know.
Sorry, I want to cut you off for a second. My boss told me when I started working at the investment bank, he said, Kramer, give me 5 years of your life and I'll give you the next 50, son. And I'm like, all right. So I gave him 2.5 and then he stole my money and closed the company and... Thanks, asshole.
Cautionary tale. So, and by the way, this doesn't mean that you guys aren't going to have to work hard or you guys aren't going to have to like completely grind and like, you know, really focus on your company for a period of time. But again, it comes down to enjoying the process. Like if you're doing it and you feel like you're miserable doing it, then it's probably the wrong choice. But anyway, sorry. That's kind of what you were talking about. But anyway.
No, that was good.
My thoughts.
So the next bit, I'll touch real briefly on, and Jason, I'll let you take the real estate one. The next bit was actually the very first episode. I think you can still watch that one for free. as like a teaser, and that's Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad Poor Dad, and him talking about taxes and how if you don't understand tax laws and you don't understand how the wealthy invest, it's very hard to ever get ahead because you're just going to get buried in taxes. And he's talking like he oversimplifies it a lot and makes it seem super easy. He's like, yeah, I don't pay any tax and I just buy a multifamily huge apartment complexes. And you're like, must be nice to afford one of those. And then you get and then he gets, you know, massive tax rebates. But the point he made, which I thought was interesting, was that if you invest in things that is that are good for the public, the government offers you tax incentives. Like if you're providing housing for people, the government will offer you tax incentives. If you're providing energy for people, the government will offer you incentives. So he invests in oil wells and energy and housing. And those businesses, he doesn't have to pay taxes on it. And if you read the corporate tax codes, there was an article I read the other day that said Amazon paid zero corporate tax in 2018. They actually got like a tax rebate of like $650 billion or something like that. And then it lists all these companies that paid no corporate tax and then are also basically owed money in credits from the government. And people are outraged like, oh my God, how could these companies do that? Like that's not fair. Right. And then you got all these liberals screaming and yelling about, you know, the wealth gap and so on and so forth. But it's like, you know, if you just understand the tax laws, if you take the time to learn it, you can use all this stuff in your favor. But these people are just, you know, they just want to like protest against the man and basically say, it's not fair. It's not fair. I, you know, I want to do no work and get paid, but you know, that just doesn't work. So educate yourself on this, learn the tax codes, you know, have in one thing that he's talked about that I thought was really good is like build a team, you know, of people who are really smart around you that understand this stuff. So your attorney, your accountant, your bookkeeper, make sure they really understand this stuff and they know how to get you all the savings that you can get because it's typically your biggest bill every year. And people just, you know, they don't even think about it. They're like, oh, I'll just have H&R Block do my taxes or whatever. And I won't really think about it. But there's so much money you could save and you could make. And one guy makes the point, if you don't really understand your taxes, you don't understand how to save that, you're robbing your family of future money. And I thought that was pretty true. So if you know, it really inspired me to understand taxes at a deeper level, especially as an entrepreneur. If you have a business, the U.S. government allows you, they basically, what was the word he used? Like if you're an employee, they don't trust you to report taxes. They just take it out of your paycheck. But if you own a business, you're the one who gets to say, all right, my business made X, but I spent Y on business related expenses and I'm left over with Z and I'm paying you taxes on Z. So, you know, you're doing your own reporting. And the way that it works is if they see your returns for a bunch of years and they don't believe you, then they'll say, all right, well, I don't believe you. So we're going to audit you. Or it's not, I don't believe you. It's like, you know, I just, we're going to audit you to make sure you're doing everything above board. But the crazy thing is if you do everything above board and you follow the tax laws, you can write off like so much stuff. It's amazing how much you can save if you have a business. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And, you know, another good incentive to, you know, to start a business at some point if you want to do that. So that was what I kind of got out of the tax part was just learn about it and surround yourself with people that know about it and don't let it just be something that you sweep under the rug and you get intimidated by. So Jason, anything you want to add on that and take away the real estate bit?
Yeah, I think this is another thing that doesn't apply to like 99% of the people that are just average Joes because you don't really have any benefits to be able to do. But it does give you incentive to like think about those things in the future. Real estate is probably the easiest one to think of like conceptually because you're like, oh, you can write off your house like a lot. You can write off a lot of things in depreciation and stuff like that. Starting your own business, like Robbie was saying, is another. Basically, taxes, I think what Robbie's saying is correct. Understanding the tax law will help you out long term. But more specifically, if you're really trying to avoid paying taxes, it also drives your behavior. So the big takeaway from the rich dad, poor dad stuff is that the government uses tax law to incentivize certain behavior. And what kind of Robbie was talking about, like the liberals out there, is what he was saying, was that, you know, a lot of them don't understand what they're incentivizing, right? So the government incentivizes corporations to do certain things, and that's why they have to pay, they don't have to pay any taxes, essentially, because corporations do understand it. Now, does that mean that, you know, without getting too political, does that mean like that's fair or not? I don't know. But what I will say is that knowing this, if you don't want to be caught up in the rat race, or if you don't want to fight what the rat race becomes, like, you know, then your job is to understand how it works and how to, and what the loopholes are. And I think that's a mindset shift for me, is that like, I think that's probably the biggest takeaway I had from that whole interview was wow, like the way I think about taxes is a little bit wrong. And like, I'm like, oh, you know, the 1%, the gap is getting wider and wider. Yes, but that's mainly because they just understand the law better and the education is getting worse and worse, right? I think that's probably the one thing that I was like, oh, wow, like I don't know any of this stuff. So therefore, you know, if I knew this stuff at 22 and like I was taught it and I was thinking like this, my mindset was like this, then I probably would be a lot better off now than I would then, because I just didn't understand, right? And like, you know, at the time I was like, oh, don't worry, I can always make more money, or like, oh, I'm already doing this blah, 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 401k stuff, it's fine, right? You know, it comes back to what we were saying earlier, you got to take personal responsibility for a lot of stuff, and you got to get educated, right? You got to get educated on this stuff, whether it's just through these theories or buying these guys' books or probably watching, I'm sure you could watch other YouTube things on this stuff, and you got to learn it, right? But yeah, I agree with that. Cool. Real estate. So
do real estate real quick, and then I'll do the crypto blockchain one.
Okay, cool. So real estate was, you know, obviously for me and Robbie, this was probably one of the ones that were like most enlightening for us. The key thing about real estate is that renting sucks. let me rephrase this. Like, a lot of what I've done to date was doing rental arbitrage, which is like I rent the property and I re-rent it out. And the returns are insane, and you can put more money to work that way, but it's also more risky. And you don't get a lot of the tax leverage that you get with buying. I think if I had to restart with the same amount of money that I had, you know, before I invested a bunch of it, I probably would have looked at buying and leveraging that because of just the tax return benefits that I didn't know I could get. I think that real estate is still one of the best investments people can make personally. I like it better than, for example, blockchain or stocks or anything like that. Mainly because I believe, you know, like a typical Chinese person, I believe in physical assets, and I like them. You know, what the big takeaways from it is that there's kind of four levers, and I don't really understand all this fully, so if I butcher this, don't sue me. But basically there's the tax benefit of like the write-off of like the actual, you own a home, so you can write that stuff off. There's the money you make from that home, like, in this guy's case, it was long-term rent. Then there's like the depreciation of stuff you can do, like the furniture and stuff like that. And then I forget what the fourth one is right now, escaping. But there's basically like four levers you can pull. And when you can pull all four levers...
The last one was appreciation.
Oh, appreciation. Yeah, that's right. Appreciation of the home, right? So when you can pull all four levers, even if like one of them is not doing so great, you have all the other levers to work with, which is really nice. Now, obviously... You know, on these things, they make it sound really easy. Oh, you just find like a good market and you buy real estate, because you can easily buy real estate in a market that's bad. But I think if I had to choose something that I would say the average person that's reasonably technical and could save a reasonable amount of money, like let's say they have like a tech job or an engineering job or whatever, where they're making probably close to six figures, or at least they're saving equivalent to what a person close to six figures would make, I think real estate might be the easiest one to get into. It doesn't require you to be like super knowledgeable about like weird things like the stock market. It doesn't require you to like know crazy things about cryptocurrency or, cryptocurrency always to me has seemed like crazy stuff to me, and you needed like insane technical understanding of it, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. But Real estate, I think people can kind of fundamentally get real estate and they kind of understand the drivers of it. And it's just a matter of like building a model that works and then like, you know, getting to there. Like if I were to be, I think if I was like starting over again, knowing what I know now, like back when I was 22 to 25, I'd probably be looking to get my real estate license. Why? Not because the real estate license in itself is that useful, but mainly because that skill of understanding how to find real estate, understanding the value of properties, understanding how all that process works is insanely valuable. And I cannot, I mean, you see like dumb hot chicks and like guys all the time get into real estate and they make a bunch of money, even if they're dumb, right? Like, yeah. So like, it's clearly there's a lot of money there, right? So it's like, now imagine what it would happen if you were like smart about it, right? It's like, oh my God, right? So that's probably the one that I think is the easiest to get into, in my personal opinion. But a lot of it also depends on your expertise, right? If you have like expertise in like, you know, let's say you know how to underwater basket weave like better than anybody else, you can probably write a guide to make more money that way too. That's probably the easiest way to do it, if you just have like an expertise in something. Like if you're like, oh, I know how to teach guitar, and you know, like therefore I'm going to make an ebook on how to teach guitar, that's probably the fastest way to make money. But real estate, in my opinion, is probably the one that if you have like zero skills today that's leverageable, that's a very leverageable skill. And I don't even think it takes that long to study for it. I think it probably will take you less than a year. I don't know. But, you know, that's my two cents on it. Sorry.
It doesn't take long at all. And that's why I'm such a big advocate for people, you know, trying the Airbnb side hustle, because it teaches you real estate. It's very simple. You know, you're not buying anything. And it's kind of like a starter pack for learning how to invest in real estate. You know, you get a place for rent, you try to cover the rent and the expenses with the rental revenue. And that's essentially how real estate works. The only difference is if you own it, you're building long-term value. You know, the returns might not be quite as good, which is what's super cool about Airbnb and short-term vacation rentals, is you can get these crazy returns if you invest in the right markets and you understand this stuff. You know, I got lucky in it when I got into it, because I just kind of got in it right at the boom. So you could kind of make money like renting a place anywhere at that time. But now, you know, it's tougher. There's more competition, more people understand it. But it really does teach you real estate, which is an insanely important thing to understand, because at some point you'll probably buy a home and you'll make the mistake that almost everyone does, which is they think their home is their biggest asset when in reality it's your biggest liability. Which is something that Rich Dad like instilled in me in age 17. It's like anything that takes money out of your pocket every month is a liability. It's not an asset. Now, if you invest in a home as a vacation rental property and it cash flows, so you know it makes more cash than you're spending on it every month, then it's an asset. But you know, so when you buy a home or when you buy an apartment or whatever, if you have a background in real estate, if you know something about it, like it positions you better, you understand all the fees and all the agents involved and so on and so forth. So that's just a little bit to add there. Jason, anything I said wrong or you want to add to?
No, I mean, I think basically what Robbie and I are saying is we're about to start a real estate fund, so if you guys like would invest like $499 for this month and do it all to pay this, we'll take good care of your money, guys. So let us do it.
Send it in. realestatebangers.com. I'll take the last and final one that they really hammer in the series. At least, you know, for the ones they've released so far, which I think is like 85% of it, which is crypto blockchain. And fuck, it's confusing stuff. I was introduced to this luckily a few years back. And I benefited greatly from the crypto run up in 2017 because a client way back in the day paid me in a bunch of cryptocurrency. I kind of forgot about it and then it went crazy and I got some really good advice to sell it at the peak. So, but for me, like understanding how to sell it, you know, I was like, fuck, how do I sell this? It was so fucking hard just to sell it because I didn't understand it. I had it in this weird, like, you know, digital wallet. And I was like, how do I get it out of the wallet into my bank account without someone hacking the system and stealing my crypto? Like, so basically crypto is like the internet in like the 1980s. And if you understand blockchain technology, which I'm not even going to try to explain because it's I'm not good enough to explain it, but it will change the world. I'm 100% convinced that basically everything that the internet did for us, blockchain will have a much more dramatic effect. It has the ability to like change governments, change it can basically like disrupt almost every single industry that we know of, because it removes the middleman from every single industry. Because you have the blockchain, which is basically like a ledger, right? It's a ledger that you cannot be fucked with. It can't be changed on, you know, what people have. Like if Jason has a house and I want to buy that house, usually I have to go through a title company and there's an escrow company to hold on to the money while it's being exchanged. And we have to make sure that title can't be duplicated and it's being held in a secure place. And so for us to make that transaction, there's all these middlemen involved. And essentially what blockchain does is it removes all the middlemen. So I could just pay Jason in Bitcoin or another sort of cryptocurrency, which is just a vehicle for blockchain. And I could get the house, and that house, the deed would be on the blockchain. So I wouldn't even need like a physical copy of it. And I would own the house and Jason would have his cash in cryptocurrency, which he could convert to whatever he wanted. And the other cool thing about cryptocurrency is right now we're on a fiat money system, which is our money isn't backed up by any assets, at least not in the US, right? So they can just print money, and you know that's what creates inflation. Because we went off the gold standard in the 70s, I believe, or the 80s. And so what's really dangerous is you see this huge debt surmounting, and from, you know, all these very intelligent people are basically forecasting that the US is in big trouble soon, the dollar is in big trouble soon. And what I believe about crypto or blockchain is you can hedge the US economy, you can hedge the dollar by investing in cryptocurrency. However, that's way easier said than done. There's like almost 1,000 different cryptocurrencies you could buy. So, you know, don't even try to like go out and buy crypto. It's like you don't know what the fuck you're doing. But really, like, do your fucking homework and start understanding crypto and blockchain, because the advantage and the opportunity we have, like, imagine you knew the internet was going to come and change the world in like the 90s. You didn't know which companies would do it, but if you bet on the space, you'd be fucking rich right now. And that's the opportunity I think we have with crypto and blockchain technology. It really will completely change the world that we know it. And the one thing that really stood out to me, a quote, was that when you're using blockchain and you don't know it, that's when it's too late. And right now there's like almost nothing using blockchain yet that's widely adopted or that we're using. So it's still extremely early. You know, you might think, oh, I missed the huge run up when cryptos went up to, you know, when Bitcoin went from whatever, a few hundred bucks to 20,000 at the end of 2017. But everyone is forecasting like that's just like it's still in its infancy. So I'm pretty excited about that opportunity because I understand it pretty well and I see how it can be applied to kind of everything. That's really what I want to leave you guys with when it comes to crypto and blockchain, is educate yourself on it, because there could be a huge opportunity with this shit. Jason?
Yeah, I'm a lot more bearish on let me put it this way. Like, I absolutely agree with a lot of what you're saying. Like, I do think that, like, blockchain and, well, specifically cryptocurrencies, because there's a lot of other reasons to use blockchain. But for cryptocurrencies in particular, there's a chance it will change the world.
But I'm not saying crypto will change.
It will.
I'm saying blockchain will. I'm saying blockchain technology will change the world. Crypto is just a vehicle that gives blockchain value. That's all it is.
Yeah. I just think that, like, if it's going to change the world, I think crypto is probably the way it does. Because I know three or four applications that I would love, like, crypto to, like, work. Like, for one example, moving money internationally, which crypto does do right now, and it, like, it's actually really good for it. But, like, people have to take it, which not everybody does, right? So that's the problem. But, like, you know, I have properties in Mexico where if I can move money easier down there, oh my God, I would save, like, you know, hundreds of dollars. I would gladly pay, you know, some company or whatever. I don't even know how you pay it, because that's the problem with cryptocurrency, is that it's decentralized, right? But, you know, I would gladly pay, like, even a lesser percentage just to make that work better. The reason why I'm a little more bearish on it is because, kind of like you were saying about the internet, right? you can't really bet on the internet space at the time. You had to bet on companies.
Sure.
Now, if there was like a vehicle of like, here's an index fund of like all the internet companies, okay, sure, but there's not really that vehicle for blockchain, and I don't think there was for internet.
You don't know how the internet's going to change the world, right? You don't know how it's going to disrupt things. You don't know what's going to change.
That's my point.
Right. So you can't bet on the space.
No.
Right. You can't even really buy a fund of cryptos, like, because it's the same problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's one of those things where if you were like really technically savvy and understood the space very well, I would probably feel differently. But like, if you're not an expertise in it, I don't think like my thing would be like, oh, so and so told you to go invest in Dogecoin or whatever, or Kodak's making a blockchain for like photographers and stuff like that. Like, go do that, right? Because I don't know, right? It's one of those things where
we don't know
how it's going to change. So I absolutely think someone's going to crush it, right? But like, I don't know who that is.
I think a lot of companies are going to crush it in different ways than we can even imagine. Like giving land titles in Africa and stuff like that. Like when you can, watch the episodes instead of listening to my stupid fucking, botched version of it. But basically I'm not saying invest in the space. I'm saying educate yourself on the space. Cause if you do, then you'll know how to position yourself and potentially make huge returns because everyone else is pretty bearish on it. And that's, when everyone's running towards a market, it's probably too late. When people are bearish on it, it's you understand it and you understand the future of it. And it's something that is, basically what they're saying is these opportunities don't come along very often, right? There's maybe like two or three in a lifetime. Maybe as technology advances and goes faster and faster and faster, there might be more, but everyone who's basically loaded and, an expert on money is saying like, this is the future. This is the next internet sort of thing. This is behaving in the same way that the dot-com, boom and bust happened. It's just educate yourself on it and try to understand it because most people will be too lazy and they won't. And there's a huge opportunity there. End rant.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Educate yourself. It's not going away. We don't know what's going to happen. Like, the last thing you want to do is, like, not be part of the second wave. I think that's probably the thing that, Robbie, or I don't know what this guy said, because I don't think I watched this episode.
There was, like, four of them.
I'm guessing that's what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Educate yourself so that you could be part of the second wave. Because the second wave is actually how a lot of, like, people make a lot of money. It oftentimes doesn't pay to be the pioneer. Now, the pioneers make the most money if you're the one that's left standing, but they also get shot. Right?
Exactly.
I think that someone said that as like a proverb or something like that, right?
Yeah.
While the settlers, the ones that come after them, they oftentimes are the ones that thrive. Now, they won't make the most return, but I don't think most of us are trying to make billions of dollars. I mean, at least not like, that's not like the, we could be happy with a lot less. So, you might make a million, right? And that's fine. So I think that's totally, that's a good takeaway from it is that I know I try to keep up with some of the stuff, but I mean, it's complicated. That stuff is like, it's literally a green field, right? Where you're like, what can come of this? Who knows, right? It's like a huge question mark. So somebody more creative than us will be able to do something cool with this, for sure.
And the cool thing is you don't really need to understand the workings of it. Like, I don't know how a HTTP protocol works. And I don't know how SSL or, encryption works, right? But I understand how to use the internet. And that's kind of what you have to think about with blockchain technology. Like, we won't need to know exactly how it works, but we'll know its application. So if you can get in front of the applications and you can see which ones will really change, then you'll know which ones to invest in. So let's open it up for questions. There's a couple other guys on the call. I'm going to unmute you guys. And if you want to ask anything or give KY and Dan and one other unknown caller.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. What's up, KY?
Hi, how are you, Robbie?
Good, good.
Yeah. So for you guys, I have a question. So Jason, you were talking about like real estate. And does it like as a starter, is that is a good like business like to start? Like it doesn't take a lot of education to try. Does it take a lot of money to start with though?
So sorry, what I was saying was getting a real estate license was, it does not require a lot of, I mean, it's a test that you have to study for, and usually you have a program, so you're going to, a lot of times you have to pay some money to take a course on it or something, but I mean, it's not, really it's not that much if you're making like a normal salary. Now, if you're like dead broke, then obviously it's going to be a little bit tougher for you, but I think, was it Robert Kiyosaki or whatever? I think Robbie, you probably heard the quote where it's like, when people say like, I don't have any money to make more money, you know, and but then they go out and they go drinking like three times a month or whatever. So it's like, sometimes you do have to sacrifice a little bit just to get that head start. But anyways, that's what I meant. Now, if you're just talking about investing in property, yes, it does require some capital. It might not require as much as you think, but it really depends on how much money you saved away. So like, I don't want to comment on your personal finances. So, but you're more than welcome to talk to me and I can tell you like what I've done. But I think Robbie we've been in situations where we've had a reasonable amount of capital to invest. So our situation may not apply to your specific situation. So.
Right.
But I will say, that being said, and I think I wrote this in one of my posts, is that like, I called like about 20 people for like $2,000 per person, right? Just to get one of my first, like, I think it was the second place I got, or maybe the third place I got, because I didn't have enough capital myself. And all those people made money. I think they all made like 10% on their investment, which is pretty good, all things considered. 10% annually, which is like, I think we had it for like 2 or 3 years. So you might be able to find deals like that. You might. Yeah, I think it was 4 or 3. I can't. I got both of them at some point. So you know, like, it's one of those things where I would say you may look at alternative ways to do that. Now, I don't know if that's the best way to go find money or not, but sometimes you personally don't need as much money as you think if you can sell the dream to other people. So that's another thing that I consider.
So now, right now, if I don't know anything about real estate, like, where should I learn from? Or like, yeah, you said you invest in like some people in yourself, in like Robert, or I don't know who, but like, if I'm starting, who should I learn from?
Sorry, maybe could you rephrase the question a different way? Maybe I
said, who should he start with to learn about real estate?
Yeah.
Oh, real estate. Do you know the guy's names, Robbie, honestly, I think it's simple. The first thing you need to do about real estate is just learn how real estate works, like the just basics of like how to buy a house, how to sell a house, all the fees that go involved in. And I think like if you went and studied like how to become a realtor, like which is a real estate license, that would tell you a lot about the fundamentals. The next piece of that is if you want to start investing in real estate, then you need to look at the big picture stuff of like how do markets work and how to predict real estate markets. And that's where some of these other guys will get into play. So like, if you find out, like, as you understand how just the basic economics of real estate work, like, look into, you know, how does the cash flow for a rental unit work? Like, if you got a single family home, you can look at, like, how much it costs to buy a single family home in terms of, like, the real estate costs, like, some of the costs to, like, do the closing costs, the taxes involved, the tax benefits you can get. If you start studying for your real estate license, for example, you'll learn a lot about this stuff as well, which is like how to find homes, how to look at listings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the fundamentals. If you get that part and you're like, this sounds awesome, I want to learn more, okay, let's like message us then and then we'll talk. But if you get to that part and you're like, this is really confusing, or this is really scummy, or I hate all this stuff, then don't pursue real estate. That's probably how I would look at it. Is that just get started at the basics level and see if it piques your interest. And if it does, then ask for advice at that point and be like, okay, I got XYZ into it. This is what I know so far. What do you guys think I should do if I want to do, you know, I'm interested in this, or this is the part that interests me, and then ask for advice on that part. A lot of the stuff I think people get in this habit of, okay, I want to do the thing that's going to make me the most money, or somebody told me this, so I'm going to go do that. And then they spend like 6 months building up this great plan and doing it, and they get to doing it, and they don't really enjoy it. I know that's happened to me before, so I don't want that to happen to other people. My recommendation is just start learning about it, like the basics of it, and then see if that piques your interest. I don't know. Bob, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's good. And some personal advice for you, KY, because I you know, I talk to you on a weekly basis for a while, and I kind of know your situation is, you know, of all the people I think I would tell to maybe like invest in this money revealed thing, it'd be you, because I know you're like, you love to geek out and like, you know, really study some of these different areas. I know you're trying to make money with, what do you call it? Drop shipping and stuff like that. And I think if you understood a wider range of these different opportunities, I think you could kind of find which one suits your talents the most, or which one would be the most interesting for you. So
yeah,
before you go like crazy hardcore into one, you might want to, you know, just chill a little bit and learn about each of them, you know, and then kind of decide a bit later.
I agree. I mean, I'm just like getting like the beginning of doing entrepreneurship, and I just have different like ideas of starting a business. And I don't know which one suits me the best yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it's a very tough sort of question to be in, because there's just infinite options, right? So, and if you start one, odds are it's going to fail, and that's great, and you learn something from all those failures. Just be very careful about investing too much in one specific thing before you really know it.
Right.
I mean, KY, I guess the other piece of this is, how much money do you have to spend? Like, if you're like, all my life savings, I have one shot, I would probably like be cautious, like a lot more cautious, right? But if you're like, hey, look, you know, I have 100K in the bank account, I want to try something for 10K, I'd be like, that's I think that's a lot easier for you to just be like, okay, just try something, right? Honestly speaking, unless I know your individual finances, like, it's hard for me to be like, this is the exact path you should take. But what I will say is, a lot of times, if you can start something for free, or if you can do something for like very cheap, or like, you know, that's probably the better way to go. And a lot of times information is free. So, you know, if you just get a bunch of information, you can a lot of times learn a lot about things and like kind of figure out what might make sense to you and what works. And then of course you can always use us in the group as like a sounding board. So
yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, let's end it here, because it's 7:15 and I don't want to keep you guys too long. But Jason, thanks so much for your input. Super valuable. Everyone else who is listening in, talk to everyone later.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.